Okay, we're beginning here by the two dots in the middle of Lamed Amud Aleph. Just to review what we concluded yesterday, we saw a machloki between Rav and Shmuel on one side and Rosh Lakish and Rav Yochanan on the other side as to what is the din of Isurim b'chol HaTorah Kula. Rav and Shmuel believe that when it comes to mixtures of min b'mino, generally when we're talking about these items, we're talking about davar lach, liquid items. By Yavesh, the din might be different, but assuming that it's something that can mix well, then according to Rav and Shmuel, when it's min b'mino, it's the same type that gets mixed together, it's Eino batel, because even a mashuhu causes a problem. On the other hand, when it comes to min she'eino mino, when there are two different types of flavors, two different types of tastes, then the threshold to whether it's batel or not batel is benotein tam. And that's what we saw yesterday. Rav and Shmuel darmei tavayo kol sirim shvatara b'mino b'mashu, shlo b'mino benotein tam. Then we saw that Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish believe that it doesn't matter whether it's min b'mino or min she'eino mino, that only benotein tam is there a problem. If it's not notein tam, there is no problem. When it came to chametz, there we saw that Rav and Shmuel were in disagreement. Rav believed that when it comes to chametz, not only is it by min b'mino a mashu, but even min she'eino mino is a mashu, because he was goes there, min she'eino mino, oto min shebimino. Reish Lakish and Rabbi Yochanan, consistent with their position in other places in Shas, do not say that chametz is any different. And in addition to that, we saw a machlok between Rav and Shmuel, and as well, Reish Lakish and Rabbi Yochanan align with Shmuel in this position, as to whether the halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda after Pesach, or is the halacha like Rabbi Shimon after Pesach. Is the halacha like Rabbi Yehuda that chametz, shavar alav Pesach, is asumi do'oraita, even after Pesach? That only has ramifications for chametz shavar alav Pesach of Jewish chametz, but any chametz that shavar alav Pesach, it doesn't matter whether it's that of a Nochri, that of Hekdesh, any chametz that's after Pesach is problematic and remains asur min ha-Torah. And Rav subscribes to that position, and therefore it's influential on his view as to what is the din of bitul achar Pesach. On the other hand, Shmuel, Rabbi Yochanan, and Reish Lakish all believe that the halacha is like Rabbi Shimon, which means that after Pesach, there is no iser midoraita on chametz she'avar alav ha-Pesach, even though Rabbi Shimon does say that it is asur. There we saw that the Gemara says that Rava had indicated knasa konis, that he penalizes somebody who was in violation of Bal Yirah or Bal Yimatzeh. He penalizes them that their chametz after a Pesach is asur, and that's where the iser chametz derives from. But because of that, there's room to be mekil, because it's all a din derabonon. Therefore, we came to the conclusion yesterday that Rava said, Hilchata, the halacha is that chametz, ben b'mino, ben shlo b'mino, is problematic on Pesach, is osur b'mashu kirav. Most of the poskim believe that that's the girsa in the Gemara. We saw yesterday that the Rabbeinu Tam has an alternate girsa, and believes that Rava did not paskin like Rav, even by chametz. Even by chametz, he paskin like Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish, and that's the Rabbeinu Tam's view, that both by chametz and any other Yisurim Shebet Torah, the halacha is like Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish. Rashi, on the other hand, took the exact opposite approach and said that Rava is paskin like Rav, both here by chametz and by kol yisurim shebet Torah. And that means that by chametz, it's asur b'mashu, as is said explicitly here by Rava, that whether it's mino or eno mino, it's not batel, because a mashu who is problematic, and therefore by chametz, either way, it's going to be asur. Whereas b'kol haTorah t'kula, he paskins like Rav and Shmuel together, as Rashi says, which is that when it's mino, it's asur b'mashu. She'eino mino, it's benotein tam. That was the view of Rashi. The Balei Tosafot, aside from the Rabbeinu Tam, and the majority of Rishonim believe that the halacha here, that Rava paskins, is that chametz has a din like Rav, but that's it. By kol yisurim shebet Torah, we paskin like Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish, which means whether it's mino or she'eino mino, it's oser b'notein tam, but it's not oser b'mashu. Chametz is different, and therefore, Rava paskins like Rav over here because of the unique status of chametz. That unique status of chametz makes it that when it comes to whether it's b'mino or she'eino mino, it's oser b'koshu. As to why it has a unique status can be for a number of reasons, which have major nafkamino to halacha. One of those possibilities is the fact that it's a davar she'esh lo matirin. That's the view of the Rambam, the Ramban, that it's a davar she'esh lo matirin, that at some point it's going to become mutar. Since it's going to become mutar, we have a principle that davar she'esh lo matirin is enu batel. And for that reason, chametz is more chamur, and it's oser b'koshu. And that's the reason behind Rava's psak, like Rav, with regards to chametz. The Balei Tosafot and other Rishonim introduced two other possibilities. One possibility is the Chiyuv Karet that is associated with Chametz, as well as the stringencies of Bal Yirah or Bal Yimatzeh, There are Isurei Hana. There is a disgorgement of ownership that has to take place. There's a Chiyuv Karet associated with it. These are stringencies that we find by Chametz and by no other Isurim. And therefore, the din of Chametz is going to be unique here, that it's Asur B'mashuhu, Ben B'mino, Ben Shelo B'mino. On the other hand, there is a possibility that the Chametz is different, not because of the stringencies, and not because of Davar Sheyesh Matirin, but simply because Eino B'dalei Minei. People are not separated from it. As opposed to other Isurim, which are always Asur, there's no question that people separate themselves away. Chametz is mutar before Pesach, is mutar after Pesach, it's only asur for that period of time. And since people are no bedile mine, therefore we took the stringencies and said that it's osur b'mashu. So that explains Rava's psak with regards to Chametz on Pesach itself. Then Rava continues to say that after Pesach, shalob is mano, ben b'mino, ben shalob b'mino, it is mutar k'Rabbi Shimon. That halacha there is like Rabbi Shimon, and he paskins that after Pesach, the halacha is like Rabbi Shimon, that there's no isur min ha-Torah. The only isur is mid-Rabbanan. And since there is only an isur mid-Rabbanan, then it's mutar after a Pesach. Any chametz that passed through Pesach or was over a Pesach is not problematic. Gemar says, how can you say that? Rava, as we already noted previously, says Rabbi Shimon was kenasa konis. He was konis, anybody who violated Ba'irei or Ba'imatzeh and left chametz over Alav Pesach. So then, how can he say over here that it's totally mutar? So the Gemara answered, and this is very important again for today's Gemara, Hanei Milei Be'enei. It's only true if the Chametz is still extant. Avalo Ayidei Tarovet. But if it's mixed, that would not be the case. Meaning that if it is a Tarovet, it's a mixture of Chametz, then we don't have this Knas of Rabbi Shimon. As opposed to, if it is Be'en, it is Chametz, that was Avar Alav Pesach, for instance, bread, that was owned by a Jew through Pesach. That is subject to this kenas and will be problematic afterwards. And therefore, that garners the din that Rava said, that when it comes to after Pesach, we don't worry about b'mino or shalom b'mino, because those are all ayudei tarovet. And tarovet is not problematic achar ha-Pesach, according to Rabbi Shimon. The kenas only applied to chametz be'en. There is a machloket rishonim as to whether that bito or that tarovet can only happen memela by itself, like all other dinim. When it comes to bitul, you're not allowed to intentionally make something into a tarovet, but if it happens to be a tarovet, then it is mutar. That is the view of the Rosh, that here you're subject to the regular dinim of bitul, and the regular dinim of bitul precludes you from mixing it intentionally, as opposed to the Rabbeinu Yonah, who thinks that even if you mix it intentionally over here, it is not problematic, because he believes that there was never a takana or a knas that was imposed on items that are bitarovet. So if you believe that it's working under the regular rubric of bitul, and the knas eliminated bitul and says that bitul doesn't apply, then we don't have the knas, then regular dinim of bitul apply, and the regular dinim of bitul, you're not allowed to do it intentionally. And that's the view of the Rosh, and the view of the Rabbeinu Yonah is that there was never a knas, and therefore there's never an isur that applied here at all, and there's no dinim of bitul. The knas just says that it's precluded, but if the knas is not applicable, there's also no dinim of bitul, and therefore you could even mix it intentionally to create a tarovet, then there would be mutar after Pesach. And the Ran explains that if this Tarovet Chametz existed either prior to Pesach or on Pesach itself in a way that you would still be in violation of Ba'ireh or Ba'imatzeh, then they would still be subject to the Knas, because the Knas is imposed on someone who violates Ba'ireh or Ba'imatzeh. So if it's a Tarovet that would be in violation of that, that Knas would have application to it even though it's a Tarovet after Pesach. On the other hand, if it is in a position where the Tarovet was before Pesach, or during Pesach in a way that you would not be in violation of Ba'ireh Ba'imatzeh, then it would continue to be mutar afterwards and would not cause you any problem. And the question as to whether something that is batel, meaning chametz that was batel before Pesach, is chozer v'ne'ur, comes back to life when the Easter of chametz exists and then becomes a problem of mashu, that is a machloket ha-rishonim, where the majority of rishonim believe that if before Pesach it was already batel, then it's not chozer v'ne'ur, and it remains that way. That's what the Rosh says, and the Torah paskins that way. Although, the Magen Mishneh points out that he thinks the Rambam does not believe that, and he believes that the chametz is chozer v'ne'ur, and even if it was batel before Pesach, it would come back to life on Pesach and cause you a problem. And the Rama paskins halacha that when it comes to lach belach, we don't say where it's mixed well, we don't say that it's chozer v'ne'ur chametz when it was batel for the cane, but be yavesh, dry items that are mixed together, we do say chozer v'ne'ur, even though it was batel before Pesach. And obviously that will have ramifications for after Pesach, whether you were in violation of Bayre or Mayimatzeh, and whether the Knas would have application to this item. Alright, so now to begin the Gemara, based on what we learned and concluded from yesterday, now the Gemara says, Amar Rav, Kederot bePesach Ishabru. When it comes to utensils, plates, bowls that were used prior to Pesach and absorbed chametz, then if they were over Pesach, meaning that they stayed extant through Pesach, then Ishabru, they need to be broken after Pesach, because it seems to be that there's a problem of chametz shavara lava Pesach. And Rav Lishitato, who paskin, as we saw before, like Rabbi Yehuda, that chametz achara Pesach is asumido raita, this chametz that is nivla, that is absorbed into the item, is still considered to be problematic. And therefore, since it's problematic, achara Pesach, it's going to create, or it's going to maintain that problematic stance. We'll have to discuss exactly why that is, because it's not extant, it's not be'en. It's not something that's tangible during Pesach, and why is that asur? Ve'amai, the Gemara says, why should it be problematic? L'she'inu l'achar Pesach. Why don't you just leave them until after Pesach? V'la'aved behu b'shelo b'minan. And then use them shelo b'mino. We saw before, according to Rav, even though he passed by the Rabbi Yehuda, achar Pesach, when it comes to chametz, shavar lava Pesach, there, b'mino, it's asur b'kol shehu. Shelo b'mino is b'no tein tam. And as Rashi notes, and Balei Tosafot note over here, that the usage of these items did not have huge quantities of chametz in them, and therefore the blia is not going to be so much or so big. So therefore, if you use it shelo b'minan after Pesach, there should be batel. And why can't you do it in that manner? We'll have to discuss how you're allowed to be mevatel and ishul chatchila. There are a lot of questions here. We'll go through each of them with Rashi and Tosafot in a second. Gemara says gzeira dil ma'atu lemeibad behu b'mino. We're afraid that maybe you're going to do it min b'mino. And b'mino would then cause you a problem, because there Rav said it was aser b'koshu. So therefore Rav says that the k'derot that were used before Pesach, that were used for chametz, have to be broken. Now this is premised on the idea that kli cheres, when it comes to earthenware utensils, the Torah says that once they've absorbed something, they can never fully be polite, they can never fully expunge that was in them, and therefore they give flavor. Since they give flavor, that chametz is going to be problematic to be used on Pesach. And after Pesach, it remains problematic because Rav Paskin's like Rabbi Yehuda, that chametz, shavar lava Pesach, chametz after Pesach is still problematic. Now, technically, if you did a chenu b'mino, you should have been able to be mevatel it, but because you could use a b'mino, we're afraid to allow that to happen, and therefore Rav believes that the proper way to deal with these kli cheres is to break them, to get rid of them before Pesach. And even though Rav before didn't go there when it came to Sheinu mino, atu mino, when it came to chametz, shalvara lava Pesach, that's because that's not something that is common to happen. It's not frequent that you would have chametz that was left over Pesach. Most people rid themselves of their chametz. On the other hand, to have kelim, in which there's intangible chametz that stays there, that's a problem for everybody. That's an issue that's faced by everybody, and over there, there's a reason to be gozer. Sheinu mino, atu mino. Shmuel amar, lo yishavru. Shmuel says, you don't have to break them. Mishaluhu l'achar zmano. You can't use them on Pesach itself, but you can leave them till after Pesach. Va'avid behu ben b'mino ben shelo b'mino. And then after Pesach, you can utilize them, whether you use them b'minan or shelo b'minan, doesn't matter. Va'az da shmo l'tameh. This is shmo l'shitato, who paskins like Rabbi Shimon, and says that chametz shavar lava Pesach is, number one, not asur min haTorah. Number two, even the knas that was imposed by Rabbi Shimon achar Pesach, is only when something is be'en, not when it is bitarovit, not when it's mixed in. It's certainly in a case where it's just balua, where it's just flavor that's absorbed. Rabbi Shimon's not going to be kones if it went through Pesach. Never after a Pesach, it's not a problem to be mevatelet. Damar Shmuel, Hanu mizabne kande. Shmuel said to those individuals who were selling earthenware utensils, whether they were jugs or pitchers or items that had been used before Pesach for chametz, and people had rid themselves of them, and now they were buying the new ones. These were the sellers of the new items to the people after Pesach. Ashvu zvinei akandaichi. Make sure that you keep your prices flat after Pesach. Don't raise the prices after Pesach, because there's a huge run on people buying new utensils because they broke all their utensils, like Rav had said. Vilo. But if you don't do that, darshina dochul ka Rabbi Shimon. I will paskin in public like Rabbi Shimon. and thereby cause the people to say that they don't need to get rid of their kelim, and they won't have to buy the new ones afterwards. So the Gemara says, "V'litrashlu." Why doesn't he do that? Why doesn't he darshan that the halacha is like Rabbi Shimon, that Shmuel like Rabbi Shimon severely? We saw already in yesterday's daf that Shmuel paskins like Rabbi Shimon. If Shmuel paskins like Rabbi Shimon, why isn't he being doresh that the halacha is like Rabbi Shimon? My answer is, "Atrei the Rav Havol." It was in the city of Rav, and therefore they followed the position of Rav in the city of Rav, and Rav paskin like Rabbi Yehuda. So Shmuel didn't want to become and be matir in Rav's city, even possibly after Rav passed away, because the halacha had not been determined yet. Therefore, his city abided by the halacha of Rav, and Shmuel didn't want to be matir that. But he said that if the sellers of the earthenware utensils are going to take advantage of the people, they're going to gouge the people with higher pricing, that he will come and paskin that the halacha is like Rabbi Shimon publicly in order to stop this price gouging that was taking place. And from here we can see, halachically, since we paskin like the halacha is, as we saw before, Rava, like Rabbi Shimon, and the halacha is like Rabbi Shimon, that means that the halacha is going to be like Shmuel over here, and that means that items or utensils that have absorbed chametz in them prior to Pesach, if they are not utilized on Pesach, because the problem of them being polite, expunging that taste or flavor during Pesach is problematic, where it's usher b'kolshehu. Nevertheless, if they're left until after Pesach, at that point in time, they will not be problematic to use, because they are less than a tarovet, because they're only just intangible flavor, and so therefore, they're not covered by the knas of Rabbi Shimon, and one can therefore utilize them after Pesach. Now there are a number of questions that revolve around this whole Gemara over here. Rashi begins to address them, and then we'll move to the Baya Tosafot to address them further. Rashi says, first of all, according to Rav's position over here, if they took these utensils before Pesach, they could just leave them for 7 days till after Pesach. Rav says, oh, there's a problem because Chametz Shachavar Lava Pesach, and Achara Pesach is Osur Midaraita like Rabbi Yehuda. But there's a problem. The time period between when you use them before Pesach till after Pesach is 7 days. And we have a principle, which is, notem tam lifkam is mutar. That something that flavor is ruined or is weakened over time, it no longer causes a problem in terms of isur. And generally the period of time for that to take place is 24 hours. Here you have 7 days, not just 24 hours. So why can't you leave these utensils afterwards and be notem tam lifkam? The flavor that they would impart afterwards would be negative flavor. If that's the case, then why would it be problematic, even according to Rav? So, Rashi says over here that Rav has two principles that he is abiding by in his psak. One of them is that the halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda, that even afterwards it's problematic when you have. Number two is that which the flavor that is subsumed in this utensil is chashuv k'mashu, has a status like a mashu. Since it has a status like a mashu, that mashu is going to present a problem after Pesach. But what about notein tam lifkam? So Rashi says, kasavar notein tam lifkam asur. That Rav really holds that notein tam lifkam is asur. The Gemara in Avodah Zarah has a question as to Rav's position about that. We'll get to that in the Baal Yitol Sofot. The Rashi says that the conclusion is that Rav holds that notein tam lifkam is asur. And therefore, Rashi says, leit hilchot kavatei mitrei tamei. The halacha here is not like Rav for two reasons. Number one is we paskin, notein tam lifkam. When a flavor is deteriorated or gives a negative flavor, it is mutar and not asur. That's number one. Number two is we paskin like Rabbi Shimon and not like Rabbi Yehuda. That's the view of Rashi as to how to explain what's happening here with regards to Rav. Now, there's still outstanding questions that apply both to the position of Rav as well as what the Gemara suggests over here, which is that we're asking you to be mevatel something lechatchila. They're saying that you're allowed to take out the flavor even though it is done through bittul, and through that bittul it will no longer be subject to the knas of Rabbi Shimon. So how can you do that? We believe ein mevatlim isur lechatchila. So how does that work here? Why is the Gemara suggested by Rav? And similarly by Shmuel, the Gemara is suggesting that it works there as well. That's number one. Number two is what Rashi suggests over here, that Rav holds notein tam lifkam is asur, yet the Gemara in Avodah Zarah says that that is questionable. And why is it here that flavor or an intangible item is given such high status or classified as a mashu? The Baal Yitol Sofot addresses all of these issues. First one is in Amarav Ktero BePesach Hishabru. Tosafot over there says, the notein tam lifkam davka b'diavad shari. Even if we paskin like Rav in the Gemara in Avodah Zarah, which has a question to Rav whether he holds notein tam lifkam is asur or notein tam lifkam is mutar, it's still only b'diavad. When you have a negative flavor, that's only b'diavad that we allow. If something already happened, we say, okay, then we're going to paskin the heter. But we don't allow you then to intentionally mix the item if it is notein tam lifkam. So even if you believe that notein tam lifkam is mutar in other places, nevertheless, we're not going to let you do that lechatchila. And therefore, Rab over here is also going to say that the notein tam lifkam is problematic. And that, actually, the halacha has implications for what we do. That's why we keep separate milchik and fleshik dishes. Even though you could just wait 24 hours between them, we are gozer, enu ben yomo, hato ben yomo. We worry about when you waited 24 hours, that it, since it's okay, you're going to not wait 24 hours sometimes, and you're going to do it when it's still a good time. Never we're gozer across the board. Whether it's notein tam lifkam or not, we don't allow you to utilize that item for switching it from milchik to fleshik or from isur to heter. None of that works because we don't allow notein tam lifkam lechatchila to be nitbatel. Rashi didn't take up this answer of Tosafot because, by definition, in these cases, the kelim will always have 7 days and be enu ben yomo. So there's no reason to be gozer enu ben yomo, mishum ben yomo. And therefore, that can't be the reason that we would consider it problematic in this case. Also, maybe the din that Rav says that notein tam lifkam is mutar might only apply when you're dealing with a flavor that's intact. A flavor that is, it itself then is deteriorating when it's be'en and it's a tangible item and the tangible item is disintegrating or breaking down. Over there, maybe we say notein tam lifkam is mutar. But over here, where the notein tam is always from the beginning a just an intangible item, maybe by intangible items where it's just elapsed time, maybe over there we don't say notein tam lifkam is mutar. So Tosafot comes up with two different ways to explain Rav's shita over here, despite the fact that in the Gemara in Avodah Zarah it's a question, and even if you paskin like notein tam lifkam mutar, maybe over here it's different, either because we don't allow you to be mevatel it when it's pogem lechatchila, or because number two is over there it's talking about real flavor, tangible flavor that's deteriorating. Over here we're talking about tam, which is intangible to start, and it's only elapsed time. Maybe over there that's not considered to be something that is notein tam lifkam. The Tosafot in Avodah Zarah actually makes another suggestion, which is that when do we say notein tam lifkam is when the problem is a problem of tam. But when you have something like chametz, which is oser b'mashu, notein tam lifkam is no longer relevant because the problem is not notein tam, because even a mashu is oser. If it's not a problem notein tam, then notein tam lifkam shouldn't be a reason to be matir in this case. So now Tosafot asks the second question. How is it that you're suggesting you're according to Rav we should leave it after Pesach and allow it to become batel when we have a principle, ein mevatlim isur lechatchila? You're not allowed to make a tarovet that creates heter lechatchila. So Tosafot brings first from a Rav Yosef, hoil v'ika tarte l'tivuta. Over here you have two things running in your favor. Number one is notein tam lifgam. Over here it's already elapsed 7 days, and it's definitely notein tam lifgam. So that's number one. Normally we would say that is mutar. Number two is umashihu shelo b'mino. And so over here, afterwards, we're talking about small quantities of chametz that were absorbed because tam is only about a mashuhu that is there. And it's shelo b'mino that you're mixing it afterwards. So the Gemara's suggestion to mix it lechatchila of shelo b'mino is because you have a stack of heterim that come together. One is that it's notein tam lifkam. Number two is we're only talking about a mashu. And number three is we're talking about min she'enu mino. All those put together would allow us then to be mevatel lechatchila. On the other hand, the Ri suggests that Kevin Shakterot Shacharisheim, the problem here, or the reason here that they allowed it is because these are earthenware utensils. And what is your alternative? The alternative is that you're going to have to get rid of them and break them. There's a hefseid merubah. So because there's going to be a hefseid merubah, or the only alternative is breaking the kli cheres, that automatically becomes like a bidiavad situation. It's as if it is bidiavad already. Because you have to break the kli, that's your only alternative, so you're already faced with a bidiavad. Once you're faced with a bidiavad already, we're going to allow you to then be mevatel lechatchila. Now, even though if it was a earthenware utensil that was less than 24 hours old, we would not allow you to be mevatel it, even though you could put enough flavor, enough items in there so that you wouldn't have to break the kli or ruin the kli. So we don't do that. Even in by hefseid, we don't allow you to be mevatel lechatchila. We don't say it's a status of bidiavad. How come over here we say it's a status of bidiavad? Because you're going to have to break the kli otherwise. Mishum dahatam bala isur harbe. Because over there, there was a large amount of flavor that was absorbed. So he uses partly what Rabbi Yosef says and adds on an additional dimension here, which is that not only are you dealing with notein kam lifkam, not only are you dealing with an isur of mashu, a small amount of flavor, and shelo bimino, but you're also dealing with something where the alternative is to break the kli, which is bidiavad. So you're already faced with the bidiavad situation. That's why the Gemara is going to allow you to be mevatel it, or suggest possibly to mevatel it in that situation. Gemara rejects it because it says we're afraid you might do it min bimino, where it doesn't work, and therefore we don't allow you to do it she'eno bimino. The Ramban makes another suggestion, which is the possibility that when the item absorbed the flavor, it was absorbed in a din of heter. And therefore, to be mevatel over here is really not so problematic because it started out as really as heter, and it just passed through a period of time that was asur, and now it's back to being heter again, and therefore we don't have the normal principles of ein mevatlin isur lechatchilo. But that explains how all of these situations we allowed you to do things that otherwise may not be allowed in other times of Isurim or other types of Bitul, because it's unique with regards to this circumstance that has a stack of items that make it that it's less problematic, or it's already a situation of Bidiavad. And again, the reason that we don't worry about it being Notein Tam, and that being the normal principle when it comes to Isur over here, Tosfot claims that it is a Mashu, like Rashi suggests over here, that the Tam that's absorbed here is only a Mashu, because of the fact that they don't use a lot of chametz together. Others, like the Pnei Yoshua, suggest that's because of the nature of chametz. It's not polate flavor into the utensil in large quantities, and therefore, by definition, there's a small amount. There are other Rishonim that say that there is notein tam lifkam over here, and the only reason we're suspending notein tam lifkam over here is because of the Isur Mashehu. But once you get into a discussion whether it's notein tam, there it's still notein tam lifkam. And Rav would subscribe to this idea of notein tam lifkam. Ramban suggests that it has to do with kli cheres, that kli cheres absorbs and does not pollute everything from its walls forever, but if it's washed in hot water and cleansed, it will not pre-pollute a full-fledged flavor, it'll only give off a mashu. So only things that are asur b'mashu will be affected by that, but not things that are only asur because of notein tam. And for that reason, we're not discussing about notein tam over here with regards to utilizing the utensil after Pesach. Now the Gemara continues, Haktanura de Tachu Beit Tichya. There was this oven that they had basted it in the bottom of the oven with fats, meaning something that was flesh. Asra Rava Bar Ilai. Rava Ilai then said, with using that oven, if you bake bread in that oven, the Michle the Rifta Afilu B'Milcha Le'olam, that you're not allowed to utilize that bread that is baked in that oven, even if you only eat it with salt. Dilma Ata the Michle B'Kutcha. So we know what the problem is because you might eat it with kutcha. Kutcha was a spread that was made in Bavel. It was a very pungent dip that had whey in it, so it was milchik. And therefore we're afraid that you're going to take this fleshik bread and then dip it into milchiks. So the word lo'olam, it's not clear here whether it's modifying the way Rashi has it, modifying the oven itself, which is that the oven remains problematic. The olam, the oven always remains problematic, even if you fire it up again. Or the olam is going on the bread itself, which means that you're never allowed to utilize the bread, even though you're not dipping it into something that is milchik, even if you're just dipping it into salt, which is the normal way to eat bread, it still would be problematic. Now, this deals with a broader issue that we'll see later on in the Masechta again, which is that one is not allowed to bake fleshik bread or milchik bread. Bread must be pariv, because people use bread as a staple product, and they eat it with any meal. They eat it with milchik meals, fleshik meals, and if you make it one or the other, then it's going to be problematic because people won't be aware of the fact that it's milchik or fleshik unless there's a siman muvhak on the item to indicate that it is fleshik or milchik. Then you can bake it in that manner. But otherwise, it's problematic to create either milchik bread or fleshik bread. And that's what Rava Bar Ilai is saying over here, that if you have this oven that was basted with these fats, it creates a problem for baking bread in it forever. Now the Gemara says, Meitav, is that really true? In lashina teisa bichalav, you're not allowed to knead dough with milk, vimlash, and if you do need it, kol hapat kula asura, then the entire pot is asura, because now you've made it into milchik bread, mipnei hergel avera. From the problem, hergel avera is a problem or possibility that you will eat it with a fleshik meal. Kiyotsebo, similarly, in the opposite direction, ein tashinet tanur be'aliyah, you're not allowed to baste the tanur with the fats of the tail. That's similar to the case that we brought from Rava Bar Ilai. Vimtash, if he does baste it, kol hapat kula asura, then the pot is completely problematic because now you have fleshik bread. Aj yasika tatanur, until you refire up the oven and that rids it of all the fats that are found there, then you can bake bread in the future and it won't be fleshik bread. So the Gemara says, from the diok out of that braita, ha usaka tanur mi ushari. If you refire the oven, it sounds like it would not be problematic to bake bread in there. Tiyufta the Rabbi Bar Ilai, Tiyufta has a strong refutation of Rabbi Bar Ilai's position, because Rabbi Bar Ilai seemed to say that it was always problematic. And the implications were, even if you refired the oven, it still would remain problematic. Now, the Gemara assumes over here that you have a problem when you bake bread in a fleshik oven. You're going to have a problem eating that bread with kutach, with something that is milchik. Tosfot asks right away, why is it a problem? Tema lichle b'kutach da notein tam bar notein tamu. This is what's called double derivative. There are two notein tams, that the fats touch the oven, they gave flavor to the oven, and the oven in return is giving flavor to the bread. So the bread is only a second derivative of flavor. The original flavor is going into the walls of the oven. The oven now gives that flavor to the bread. And by notein bar tam, by notein tam, we don't think that that's problematic to eat it with milchix. You can't have it together with or dip it into the kutach. As the Gemara in Chulin says that if you take fish and you put it onto a fleshik plate, then you're allowed to eat that fish with milk afterwards. It's not problematic at all. So Gemara in Chulin, it speaks about a case where someone takes a knife that's besari and cuts a tznon, cuts a radish. Over there, even though it seems to be that that should be tam sheni, nevertheless, the Gemara says it's problematic. So Rashi brings two reasons as to why it's problematic. One possibility is because it's a dover chorif. And as a dover chorif, it then brings the flavor back to life. And when you're cutting a tznon, when you're cutting a radish, over there we said that the tznon, the radish, does absorb from the plate. And it is problematic, even if it's a notein tam bar notein tam. So Rashi gives two reasons over there. One is either because it's dover chorif, it's a very strong flavor, it's a potent, pungent flavor, and therefore it reawakens the flavor in the plate, and it's as if it's super hot because of that, and therefore the flavor is as if it's brought back to life, and therefore it's problematic. So to over here, in the oven, where the heat is intense, we would say the same thing. It gives fish, goes on the fleshic plate, it's not problematic to eat it together with milchix. Because over there we're talking about a plate where the meat was not cooked in the plate itself, and the fish wasn't cooked on the plate itself, and therefore the flavor as well as the heat is not intense. The plate that it's put on, you did not cook it or bake it in. And since it wasn't cooked or baked in there, the absorption is less absorption, and so therefore we don't worry about the fact that the plate that was fleshic now will impart its flavor to the fish that's on it because it's not being cooked on that plate itself. Therefore, there's a limited amount of flavor transference, and it's tam sheni. That will make it that it is mutar to eat the fish together with the milchix. That's not true in our case over here. But in our case, when you're talking about baking it and cooking it in the oven itself, in our case over here, you're talking about a case where the bread is actually baked in the oven together with the fats that were there, or oven that had absorbed from the fats. In that case, according to Rashi, that does not the same as the case in Chulin. Over there, there is transference of flavor, and therefore it would be problematic. And for that reason, it would not be classified as notein tam bar notein tam, that you'd be allowed to eat with milchix. So that's one way you could solve the problem. But Rashi over there then brings a second possibility as to what the problem is when you're cutting the tznon, when you're cutting a radish, because when it comes to cutting with a knife, the knife has fat on it that can't be cleared off, and therefore there's basar be'en on the knife, and that gets absorbed by the radish, and that's why it's problematic. How do we explain that over here, where by the oven, you don't have any fat that is still extant, that got burnt up, it's basted onto the base of the oven? So the Baalei Tosafot say over here that the same thing applies to an oven that's made of kli cheres. Yishamar deshuman shal cheres inu yochol kaneach yafeh. That the fats that are on the base of the oven can never be cleaned out or burnt out completely or easily. And therefore, it's as if they're be'en, it's as if they're still extant. It's as if they're still extant. When the bread comes into contact with them, it makes the bread bisari. Because it's bisari, you can't have it together with the kutach. So now the Gemara continues, Amalei Ravina the Ravashi, Bichima Achar di Totav Rava Bar Ilai. Now that we've already dismissed the position of Rava Bar Ilai because there was a strong refutation of his position, Maika Amar Rav, Kedero Pesach Yishavru. Then why does Rav, the original position we saw at the beginning of today's daf, the Rav says that when it comes to utensils that are utilized before Pesach for Chametz, the plates and the bowls, how come you have to break them and you can't keep them to be used after Pesach? Because it's, again, the same problem of notein tam bar notein tam. And we saw that there's a way to solve that problem. You just fire up the oven again, and that clears out the fat or the problematic flavor that's there. Do the same thing over here. Amalei, he says, hotom tanur shel matechet, hacha b'gdera shel cheres. One possible answer is that Rav Bar Ilai's case was talking about a metallic oven. And in a metallic oven, you can get rid of flavor because it's not kli cheres. Over here, we're talking about utensils that are made out of earthenware. And there, you can't get the flavor out. And that's why it doesn't work. V'baitema havaha b'shel cheres. Now, the oven was also an earthenware oven, but there's a big difference. Zehesekam bifnim, the zehesekam bechutz. The problem is, or the difference is that, so when it comes to an oven is heated up internally, and therefore it can sustain very high temperatures, and you can kosher it because you can reheat it to the point that it was utilized. On the other hand, zehesekam bechutz. And when it comes to doing libun, which is the way to kasher these items on a kli cheres that is used as a kdeira, they're heated from the outside, not from the internal side, not the inside. So then why don't you just heat it up? Put coals into it on the inside, and you'll heat it up from the inside. People will not bring it to the right temperature in order to kasher it because of the fact that they are afraid it's going to break. It's only made to sustain the heat from the outside. That's the way it was fired in the kiln. That's the way it's made, and therefore they're afraid to put that type of heat or reach those temperatures internally because it's going to break. If they're afraid to do it, they're not going to bring it to those temperatures, and therefore you can't accomplish libun, which would be the way or the mechanism for kashering it. Hilkach. So the Gemara then concludes, Hai buchya, when it comes to these tiles, if it's used and the way that it's utilized is by heating it from the outside, then it is problematic because you can't kasher it because you will not put the coals on the internal side which would allow you to kasher it because its major use, so the primary usage is from heating it from the outside. Imalia gumre, on the other hand, if you fill it with coals and that's the way you utilize it or that's the way that you kashered it, shapir dami, then it would work because then it would reach the temperatures of libun. And that would allow you to kasher these items. There is a question amongst the Rishonim, if b'diavad, you do go and put the coals in, and you do libun internally, is it successful? It seems to be that the Rashba believes that it works if you did it internally, whereas the Ritva says that you can't do it. Once the Chachamim precluded your ability to do it, even if you did it, it doesn't work because of the Takanat Chachamim, that we're afraid that you're not going to reach the temperatures of libun. The Rabbeinu Tam later on asks a question, which is, don't we have a principle in the Torah that when it comes to kli cheres, when it comes to earthenware utensils, what they absorb is never fully expunged, and therefore they're always problematic? So how over here does this heating them up or firing them up, libun, help you out in these situations? So Rabbeinu Tam claims that it's functioning not like normal, what's called kibol o kach poto, the way that an object absorbs something, the same way it expunges it, and therefore if you bring it to the same temperatures or bring it under the same situation as it would have been when it absorbed the flavor, it would expunge and the flavor would no longer be there. That's true when you're heating something up in order to get rid of the isur that's embedded in it. But in the case where you're firing up the oven or these kelim over here, the reason you are successfully able to kasher them is not because you're expunging the flavor that's in them, but it's as if you're making them into a new kli. And that's what Rabbeinu Tam says, Elo chashiv yotze mido dofyo. It's not that the flavor came out of the walls. The kevin she siko nasek kli chadash. It's as if it's a brand new kli over here, and that's the reason that it's mutar, and that's the reason that you can utilize it over here. Because libun chamur is considered as if it's a brand new kli. Therefore, in kashering a kli, whether it's done by cleaning it out, it's done by hagala, putting it into boiling water, or it's done by libun kal, a firing up of the kli, but not to the point where it is white hot. All of those are functioning under the rubric of kibolo pach bolto. The way that the flavor is absorbed, that's the way it's expunged, that's the way it's exuded, and that's how you're removing the problematic flavor that's there. On the other hand, libun chamur works in a totally different manner. It's not doing it by removing the flavor, it's doing it by recreating the kli. It's as if the kli was destroyed and recreated, and that's why now the kli is kasher. And now, even though that will help with, they wrote, with kelim that are not ovens, the Balei Tosafot try to answer on behalf of the Rabbeinu Tam that when it comes to ovens, the only thing you can do is heat it up internally. And if you heat it up internally, you'll get rid of the Easter that was there, and therefore will no longer be flavoring that which is there, but you can't make it completely panim chadashot so that you make it tahor from being tamei. And that's why in the Mishnayot and Kelim, the only way to make an oven tahor is to cut it up into pieces. You can't do it by firing it up, because since it's used to being fired up that way, that's not called panim chadashot. So libun chamur will then kasher the oven, but it will not make it tahor or into a brand new kli because it's the normal way that it is utilized. Kelim that normally are not fired up to the point of libun, that where they're white from the fire that's touching them, there that is as if they became a new keli. But an oven that's built to do that, that's not considered to be or classified as a new keli. So Amale Ravina le Ravashi. So Ravina poses another question to Ravashi. Hanes sakine de pischa. The knives that we want to use on Pesach, heche abdin lehu. How do we make our knives that we use the rest of the year? How do we kasher them in order to use them for Pesach? I buy new knives for Pesach. I don't kasher my knives. Amalei, tinach mar defshale. That's okay, Ravashi, you're the Rosh Yeshiva, you're wealthy, you can afford to get new knives. For us, or other people who can't afford it, My, what's the din? How do they kasher their knives to be usable on Pesach? Amalei, ana kein charatak. I mean, I didn't mean that I buy new knives. I make them as if they're new. I mean, I kasher them to the point where they are classified like new. How do I do that? Katayu betina. I wrap their handles in plaster. Uparzalayu benura. And then I put their metal into the fire. I do libun. I fire up the metal to the point where it's white in order to kasher them. V'hadar ma'alayna l'katayu berotchim. And then afterwards I peel off the plaster from the handles and I put them into boiling hot water. I do hagala in order to kasher the handles. So he wanted to make sure that he kashered the knife, the blade itself properly. He didn't want to be afraid of damaging the handle and he wouldn't heat it up properly. So therefore he covers or insulates the handle so that he can then fire up the blade to a temperature in a way that would kasher the blade. Then afterwards, when he's finished with the blade, he then kashers the handle, which is an important halacha that you can kasher items in stages. You can do this if you can't fit a utensil into a hagalah pot, that you can kasher half the pot and then turn it over and kasher the other half of the pot. You don't have to do it all at once. You do it piece by piece. And here you see Ravashi doing that with regards to the knife. Then the Gemara concludes, that both of them can be done through hagala. You simply can put the knife into boiling hot water. That's the handle and the blade itself. Over kli rishon, and it has to be a kli rishon. Now kli rishon in Shabbat is defined as something that was either on the fire, kli rishon shala esh, or kli rishon shehusar min esh. The guys to kashering, almost all the rishonim believe that it's a kli rishon shala esh. Means it has to be literally on the fire, and a kli rishon. A kli sheni is not hot enough, doesn't reach the temperatures that the knife was subjected to when it absorbed the flavors of Yisur or the flavors of Chametz. And therefore, the only way to kasher it is to bring it back to those same temperatures and have it expunge the flavor into the waters there that will then be in excess of the tam, and then they will take away the tam. First of all, you have to wait 24 hours before you do it, so it's not in tam defgam, so that positive flavor doesn't impart it to the water and then reabsorbed into the knife. And then once you do that, the flavor is expunged and the boiling water will be sufficient to be mevatel the tam. And in many places, when it comes to doing kashering of kelim, they're afraid that people didn't wait the 24 hours, so they put into there some sort of bleach or some sort of caustic agent that would make it that it's automatically notain tam lifgam, which might have other negative ramifications halakhically, but they do it to protect for all those people that don't necessarily know or don't wait 24 hours before they bring their kelim to be kashered then behagalah. So the conclusion is that you only need hagalah both for the handle and for the blade itself. So then why did Rav Ashi do that? As Rav Ashi says over here, he was machmir latzmo. He wanted to be machmir on himself to do it that way, but that wasn't the ikar halacha. The ikar halacha is that you simply have to do hagalah on the handle of the knife and the knife itself, and that's important. You can't do hagalah just on the blade and not the handle, because we're afraid then you won't reach the point where you can get to the handle. The part that's very close to the handle will not get kashered. Therefore, it's only if you can put both the blade and the handle into the hot water that you can kasher it. Tosafot over here brings a Tosefta from the Gemara in Avodah Zarah, where he says that the requirement for kashering knives is that you have to do libun, just like a grill that's on a barbecue or a skewer that are loose on an open flame. The only way to kasher them is to go and kasher them on open flame, which is through libun. And over there it says that knives also have to be kashered through libun. So how do I reconcile those two? So Tosafot in Avodah Zarah, and over here it says that it depends on the type of knife. If it's a smaller knife that's only used for items when they were hot and when it was done by Haggalah, then the way to kasher it is through Haggalah. If you have very big knives or long knives where they not only use them for cutting hot items, but they also use that to skewer the meat that was on the barbecue or on the grill, or they dip them into the fire in order to pull something out, those will require libun in order to kasher them. And then Tosafot in Avodah Zarah also adds the fact that even though you have long knives, if the majority of usage is used in a case where you do not put them into the fire and there's only a small usage when you dip them into the fire, then you can still kasher them through Haggalah. And the Ran expands on that and says that even though the knives normally are not used in a kli rishon and they're not normally used in the fire, but they're sometimes used in the fire, sometimes in a kli rishon, and most times in a kli sheni or things that don't require Haggalah, we still come up with this middle position where you use Haggalah to kasher it, because that way we're at least doing something to kasher it, but we're not going after the rove where we say that it doesn't need anything, but we're also not going to go after the minority that says it requires libun, and we come in this middle position to do Haggalah with these types of knives. That's one way to explain it. The other way to explain it, the Tosafot suggests in Avodah Zarah, is the fact that Chametz is heter, that was nivla. And since it was heter, that was nivla, there is a way you can expunge it through Haggalah, and you don't need libun to remove it. The Ramban disagrees and says that Chametz before Pesach is not called hetera, And therefore, you would still need Liburn, and then you'd have to go back to the original distinction that Tosua made, depends on how the knife is used, as to how you will have to kosher the knife. So, Amar Rav Huna, Breder of Yeshua, Eitz Parur. If you have a piece of wood, it seems to be like it's a wooden spoon that is used to mix the pots. Magilo Berotchin, Ubikli Rishon. The way that you kosher it is the same way that you utilize it, since it's used to mix hot items on the oven, or in pots, and it's used to stir it, it's been used in a Kli Rishon. Same way you kosher it is through a Kli Rishon. You put it into boiling hot water on a fire after it's Enu Ben Yomo and you kosher it. Katsavar, he holds Kibolo Kach Polto. This fundamental concept, principle, that is behind all of kashering, which is the same way Kibolo, the way that it absorbs, Kach Polto, that's the same way that it expunges, same way that it removes the flavor. And therefore, the way that you kosher it is the way that it was utilized, that same way is the way that you have to kosher it. So if it was utilized in fire, it needs to be kashered by fire. If it's utilized in hot water, then it has to be kashered by hot water. If it's used in the cold, then it just needs to be rinsed out and doesn't need to be kashered in any other way. It just needs to be cleaned. So they asked of a Meimar or the other possible girsas of Mereimar. Hane mane de kunya. These utensils of kunya, malush de mushe bu bepescha. Can you use them on Pesach? Now, it's clear that the utensil we're speaking about here has an earthenware base, and it has some sort of coating that's on top of it. Rashi over here says that the kunya is plumier, from the letters PB, which are the table of elements that's for lead. So Rashi and Tosafot over here seem to indicate that this is a lead-glazed piece of earthenware. Rashi and Tosafot in Ketubot, on the other hand, seem to say that it was speaking about glass coating. And the question seems to be, what is the status of this kli? Since underlying it, it's an earthenware utensil, and we know that an earthenware utensil cannot be kashered. But over here, since you have a coating on the outside, what does the coating do? Does the coating, first of all, prevent the flavor from reaching the kli cheres because it doesn't penetrate deeply, and therefore you can kasher it because lead and glass can be kashered? That's one possibility of what the question is. Or the other possibility of the question is what is the status of the lead and the glass over here? And that's why Rashi and Ketubot might have not explained it as being lead, because then if it's a lead coating, it should have the same din as lead or a total kli that was made out of lead. Whereas with glass, the glass glaze on top, question is, what's the status of glass? How does we treat glass vis-a-vis kli cheres? Is it different? Is it the same? Can you kasher it or not? The halacha turns out to be a machlok between the Sfardim and the Ashkenazim. But over here, the question is, when you have this glass glaze on it, what is the status of the kli cheres underlying that glass glaze that is on top of it? Gemara says, Ameimar, Mereimar says back, Yeroka, if the glass or lead glaze is green, which means that it has mixed in it metals that are green, whether that's a copper or alum base, Loti Bailach de Vadaya Sire, that for sure is problematic, because that is very absorptive, or that allows the flavor to penetrate into the kli cheres. Kitibailach uchme vichyure. Question comes up when it's black. Some people say red vichivare, which is white. My, what's the din there? Hechiditbe kartufine. If it has cracks in it or it has ridges in it, loti bailach. That's not a question, because then the seal is not perfect around it. Devada yasire. Then it's for sure problematic, because it can penetrate or reach the kli cheres that's underneath. Kitibailach deshi. When it's very smooth, where it creates a real seal around the kli cheres. My, what's the din? Amalei, chazina lehu demidaiti. As Rashi explains over here, I see that they are spitting out, meaning that they are exuding on the outside of the kli, which means that even though you're cooking on the inside, I see liquid building or flavor building on the outside of the kli, which means that it's not only is it just penetrating the outer layer, which is glass, but it's going all the way through the kli cheres. And once it's deep into the kli cheres, alma ba'ale ve'asire, it's absorbing it, and it is asur. My taima, why is it asur? Because the Torah hida kli cheres. The Torah already told us with regard to kli cheres, she'en yotzei midei dofyo le'olam, that it never leaves its... Now, if you have a girs of dofno, it means from its walls forever. That which is absorbed is never, ever expunged or removed from the walls, and it always imparts flavor. Or the way that we have it here is dofyo means the word dofi. As the Rishonim explained, dofyo means from its degraded state, which means from the problematic of having the isur in it, which is problematic, it never leaves it ever, and it can never change its status. And that's what it means from the word dofi, which means something that's not true, something that's problematic. It will remain in that status forever. The Baal Tosafot explained over here, how do we know that that's not just the gzeret ha-kaduv, and has to do with absorption of flavor because it's juxtaposed to the din of metallic nechoshet and kliyetz, where over there, only if flavor is imparted to the item, is it problematic. And that can be removed by putting it in water or putting it through fire. And since over there, the context in which the klicheris is mentioned as problematic is one of absorption of flavor, it must be that the problem with klicheris is that you cook with it and it absorbs flavor and it's not a gzeret hakatub. And therefore over here, where it absorbs flavor, and we can see that by the fact that it's exuding some of it on the outside of the kli, then it's never going to come out of its walls forever, and that remains problematic. The Gemara says, "Hamayishna l'inyan yain nesach." How is this halacha here with regards to Pesach different than what we find by yain nesach? There are darish mereimar or ameimar, depending which girsa you have. Mani dekunya, these earthenware utensils that are glazed with either lead or glass. Ben uchma, ben chivare, ben yiroke, whether it's black or red, white or green, shari, they're all mutarim. It doesn't matter which one you use over there. So how come by yain nesach, which is also problematic and has an Isur of Amashu and has an Isur Hana, how come over there we don't worry about the absorption? Over here we do worry about the absorption. That all the institution of Yain Nesech is all imposition derabonon. It's not a din d'oraita. So Chametz d'oraita and Yain Nesech d'rabonon, and that's why there's a difference. That can't be the explanation. Vaha, kol d'tikun rabonon kein d'oraita tikun. Whenever the Rabbanan established a principle, they always patterned it after the paradigm of the Torah. And over here, you have a paradigm of the Torah in Chametz, and Yain Nesach should have no distinction. It should have the same din over here. It's one thing if it's something that's created without any basis min haTorah. But over here, where there is a basis min haTorah for the din d'Rabbanan, it would follow the paradigms of the Torah. So why would you differentiate the din? So that's a very simple answer. Zeh tashmisho yidei chamin, v'zeh tashmisho yidei tzonein. This is used through heat, and this is used cold. Yain nesech, yain is cold, and since it's only utilized with cold, there's no problem of absorption over there. And that's what the Baal HaTos would say before, the problem by Kli Cheres is absorption. And since there's no absorption, there you just need to rinse it out, and then you can utilize it. On the other hand, where it comes to using it with heat, there's absorption. And when there's absorption, you can't get it out, because that's what the Torah says. Kli Cheres needs to be broken when it has absorption of flavor. So Amar Rava Bar Ava, Amar Rav Chia Bar Ashi, Amar Shmuel. You can use any utensil that was only used for cold, can be used for matzah. Here there's a major machloket in the Rishonim as to what that means, you can use it for matzah. Does that mean that you can use it only for cold matzah issues or cold things on Pesach? Does that mean you can even use it for hot items on Pesach? It happens to be that the Rif is a machloket in the Baal HaMor and the Milchomo to the Ramban, as to what the Rif's Shita is with regards to this. The Ramban believes the Rif's Shita is that you can only use it with cold items on Pesach, not with hot items. Because Chametz is Charif, or pungent in some way, and it's absorbed even in cold Kelim, and therefore you can't use this Keli with hot items for Matzah because of the absorption of the Chametz that took place when it was cold. On the other hand, the Baal HaMor suggests that you can even use it with hot items on Pesach, because since it never absorbed anything of Chametz, there's no problem to utilize it for Pesach even with hot items. Chutz min beit seor, with the exception of something that had sourdough in it, ho shechimutzo kasheh, since it's very pungent and very powerful, then we worry about absorption into the kli, even though there was no heat, meaning that it simulates the heat because it's, as what we call a davar charif, it's something that's very pungent, very strong, and therefore it simulates the effect of having heat, and therefore you can't utilize it on Pesach.
Even for cold items, even though that would not absorb, because maybe you'll come to use it for hot items, and since it did absorb when it was cold, the chametz, then if you use it for hot items on Pesach, it will become problematic, so we don't let you even use it for cold items on Pesach.
Amar Vashi, ubeit charoset kebeit seor. And a beit charoset, which is explained by Rashi as anything that has vinegar that's mixed into it. So there they have flour and vinegar that were used as a dip mixed together. Since that has pungency in it, it has the same din as a beit seor, shechimutzo kasheh domi. It's as if it has sourdough, it's as if it has something in there that is being absorbed into the walls, and therefore it can't be used on Pesach. Amar Rava, hani agnei de mechuzah, hova tadir le melech behu chamira. These troughs of mechuzah, since they, on a regular basis, need the dough in them, umishalbu chamira, and then they leave the bread in them overnight, kebeit seor, shimichuzo kasheh dami. It has the same status as if it is a sourdough that's left in a trough, or in a bowl, because overnight the fermentation takes place with the bread, and therefore since you're leaving there for 24 hours, it has the equivalent of simulating the effects of heat or
imparting flavor, and therefore it's problematic. The Gemara says, pshita, that's exactly what we just said before. When you have these items that stay for a long period of time, or like the vinegar together with the flour that says a dip that's left in for a long time, or you have the beit seor, which is the sourdough, which are pungent, those items have the same effect or same impact as heat. So why would you think otherwise? He says, ma'adutema, given the revicha, since these troughs were very big and they had a lot of aeration to them, shalipu avira below bali. Since the air flow can get in there, they wouldn't absorb, kamash malan, that the airflow does not solve your problem over here, and they remain problematic. Okay, we're going to stop here by the Mishnah on the bottom of Lamed Omed Bet.